Hey, Ann, can you hear me?
I think Anne's on mute.
Okay. Oh, just okay, perfect. I just wanted to have someone be there. Can you hear me well, Marianne?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure because when I was doing a presentation for the advisory, my mic was coming in and out, so I don't want that to be happening for this meeting. So it's good to know that there's no lag. Okay.
No lag. I can read you loud and clear.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, David. Can you hear me? Nope.
I can hear you, Alan. You're fine.
Thank you, Song. Does my logo shirt show?
Nice shirt.
I could see, I mean, the logo, but you know, it's because it's far away, you won't can really see
Yeah.
it zoomed in.
Have you been, Song? Oh,
Been
he's
well. I've been well, Alan. It's, you
yeah.
know, I don't know if on your side, if you see blue skies, but here on my side, I see blue skies and it was, you know, sprinkling a little bit here. So
Wow.
yeah, it's good that we needed it to help clean out the air.
I can actually see the ocean from my window. It's like first time in a long time.
Yeah, that is good. But I heard that, you know, we're gonna get like 2 days of good air, but then once I think the winds are going to come down and bring all the
Yep.
smoke. So enjoy it while it lasts.
Absolutely. Hello, Director Carbone. How are you?
Good, and yourself?
Very well, thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Stedman.
Romero, how art thou?
I am doing fine. I was just mentioning to Song that I can see the ocean for the fir and the sun for the first time in what seems like forever.
Should be around until the weekend, and I think it might come back.
Yep, that's what Song and I were discussing. It's like, well, I'm going to enjoy it while we can.
It's I bought a particulate filter for my house, and it was running and running and running, and the numbers kept on keep going higher. I don't know what was going on, so I may end up sending it back, but I was just like, wow, this isn't really helping.
I have two, and the company's name is called Molecule.
That's a good one.
Yeah, they're on the ARB list for sure, and they are very good. They can be
Much
a
are
little,
they?
about $800.
It's expensive.
Oh, yeah. That's I'll breathe in all the contaminated air for.
I'll put my 2.5 on. Like, with Lisa's condition, it's she's so long compromised that we really had to be careful because during that really thick smoke events, it would come right through the house. Just.
No, I think that's what's happening. My, it just was the higher it got outside, the higher it got inside. It was like I had a window open and I was looking,
Yeah.
where is it coming from? And that's just how California houses, they're worse than Hawaii. Those houses are very leaky. I mean, you want the breeze coming through.
Right. Well, a lot of them are single wall construction.
Yeah.
So I quickly realized I had to close my fireplace damper to keep that. But even still, that Ian helped a little bit. But hello, Amy.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you,
Very well, thanks.
Alan?
Sitting here in sunshine, which is a rare commodity lately.
And blue sky.
And blue sky, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Song, is your mic working?
Mic is good. I made sure I double check.
Awesome.
I had to bust out my gaming headset for this meeting so that I get crispy clear mic.
It looks like you're ready to get in an airplane and fly away. Yeah.
Well, doesn't your Bose should work pretty good though, Song? That's got to be.
Yeah, I was using Bose for the advisory committee, but it was going in and out, so.
Okay.
I didn't want to risk it, so I had to use a different headset that actually has like a mic thing. So.
Boom! It looks good.
Just to make sure.
Yeah. Well, everybody looks nice and healthy. That's good. Some of us have longer hair than the others.
I was looking pretty crazy for a while, and I finally, I think the fire guys were like, who is this Jerry Garcia character?
I was telling David I'm channeling a former engineering manager. His name was Fred Thoitz. He talk about a Jerry Garcia look. He had this big bush, like, and a beard to match.
His dogs matched too. He had some English shepherds.
Okay, we get some board members showing up.
Hello,
Director McCain.
Hello, hey, all right, Alan.
Hey, Jack.
Good day. I want to take a deep breath.
Yes.
Finally. Oh my gosh. You know, I was saying to Rich earlier, you know, I just couldn't imagine somebody that smokes in this kind of conditions. You know, it's just
mind boggling.
Yeah. We were getting a lot of complaints from people that their neighbors were using leaf blowers to disperse the dust.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah.
can we do something about that? I'm like, yeah. Well,
yeah.
For the rain.
No bonfires on the beach in Carmel.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't. That's funny. I didn't think of that. We didn't put any kind of restrictions. We didn't get any complaints, at least. But it was actually worse during Sober Honest. We had days that were well over 400, which is the extreme danger hazard. So, I mean, stuff like they're seeing in Oregon now, which has the distinction of being the worst air quality on the planet. So,
wow, on the planet.
Wow. The planet. Ooh, not good.
Definitely not. Makes my EV a lot nicer to drive.
That's there you go, Director McShane.
Hey, man.
Gotta keep that one going.
Hey, pretty soon I'm gonna need to get a new one. I'm really, you know, I finally had to take it to the Nissan dealership. And I wanted to say, first time, right? 2 years. I mean, I probably put 10,000 miles on it and my bill was like $260.
What'd they do?
They checked the brakes. They put new fluid in the brake lines. Yeah. They rotated the tires. I mean,
new windshield wipers.
Yep, windshield wipers, and they washed it for me.
Oh. Hey, so the Nissan Ariya is about ready to debut. It's a beautiful car. It's a crossover. It's going to be pretty hot.
Okay, I'll be ready.
Alan, have you looked at the Jeep 4XE?
There you go. Wow.
Yeah, 25 miles all electric, and then it goes into hybrid mode and gets about 50 miles to the gallon for a full-size four-door Jeep.
Beautiful. That's
coming out in December.
Oh, cool.
About time for you to get a new car there, Director. You probably put 200,000 miles on that.
I've got 250,000 on my Volt, so I'm ready.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
We got to have an award for that. Like, you know, I always like reading in the newspaper when they talk about somebody that owns a Volvo and put 6 million miles on it or something crazy. You know, we got to have like.
Yeah, I put one of those in a forum. I said, hey, anybody start having this little issue at about 220,000 miles? And everybody laughed. They're like, nobody goes that high on these things. Sorry.
Well, with that, I think we have a quorum, right, Ann?
Where'd you go, Steve? I wanted to make you co-host. There you are. Thank you.
Okay.
I want to make you a co-host. Okay. I lost you in the mob. I believe we... Okay. I think we do have a quorum. We must. We're pretty full. Let me count. Do a head count real quick. Literal head. One, two, three, four. Yes, we do. We definitely have a quorum. We are good.
Well, we'll go ahead and call to order this meeting of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District Board of Directors. Thank you for coming. In accordance with Governor Newsom's executive order, we are meeting virtually. We're doing all we can to accommodate the public and just want to thank everybody for their patience. With that, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. And well, let's see here. I don't know. Why don't we go with Jack? You want to lead us in the pledge?
I'd be happy to. I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, Ann, you ready to call us to order with the roll call there? Get us going?
Well, I apologize. I always forget to bring our flag in here, and I apologize for that. Director Botello? Director Lopez?
Here.
Director Ledesma?
I'm here.
Director Spencer? Director Dillis?
Here.
Director Parker?
Here.
Director Phillips?
Here.
Director Carbone?
Here.
Director Coonerty?
Here.
Director McShane?
Here.
And Director Friend?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great. Okay. The time has come for public comment. So any items not on the agenda, public is invited to share what they would like. And I think we've certainly invited the public to submit any public comments to Ann. So just scanning here, I don't see any members of the public present. Ann, have you got anything that's been submitted?
No, I haven't received any emails or mail, and I don't currently see any hands raised.
Okay, well, thank you. So we'll move on to reports. Our budget, personnel, and nominating committee met. We took no reportable action. Rich, any report from the advisory committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On September 3rd, the advisory committee did meet. And they recommended board approval of Rule 426, which you'll hear today. That's our architectural coatings rule. They received a presentation and provided comments on our draft annual AB 2588 Air Toxics Hotspots program, which you also will be hearing today. They also heard a report on our mid-year engineering compliance activities and our air monitoring results for the 6 months preceding. And that was the business we held at that time.
Great. Any questions from board members on either of these reports? Okay. Seeing none. Ann, any public? No. Okay. So comments, referrals from members of the board. I just want to acknowledge Rich and the district for the role played in the fires. It's been a month. In fact, I think last meeting I was not able to attend because we were evacuating my sister-in-law, brother-in-law, and my in-laws. We had five folks and a dog living with us, which was an adventure. We're not a big house, but we got through it. And I, again, just want to acknowledge the role of the district. Rich, you did great on TV and certainly
I think we lost audio.
And that's why we have to fix the digital echo. Just kidding.
Looks like he signed off and is going to try to re-sign in. We want to give him a few minutes. There he is.
There he is.
You're on mute.
Sorry about that. Lost connectivity. But anyhow, may have lost you there. I think Rich, have you already started with your report?
No, I have not.
Okay. Sorry, I got cut off there. I was just acknowledging the great work that you did during the fires, Rich. And any questions or comments or any comments at all right now from anybody? Okay, so Rich, it's up to you. This is your time for your report.
Okay, I'll try to keep it brief. Good afternoon, members of the board. We've been consumed by fire-related activities, and I wanted to say that staff has done an amazing job at getting all our reports together, putting updates on the websites, translating materials. It's been a total team effort, and this has garnered this agency a lot of attention. And as you said, Steve, we spent a lot of time with the news media. In fact, we actually got some national airplay with NPR on our fires. The local news story news outlet did a story that went national. And so that was nice to see. I only had a couple of sentences. I'm not even sure what they used. But we've also been updating and revising our air quality advisories based on the projections and current air quality levels. We have gotten into the unhealthful and hazardous levels as a result of the fires. It's hard to distinguish where the smoke is actually coming from, but we'll just say from everywhere. Most of the state, if not the West Coast, is on fire, contributing to a lot of our issues. I will say, too, we expect this to be improving today and tomorrow and through the weekend, and then it may set up to be smoky again if another high pressure moves in the area. We've been also addressing a lot of questions from the public about our monitoring sites and their personal monitors and why they don't agree. We knew this was coming. And I see that even some folks are advertising Purple Air over our monitoring sites. Purple Air is a small handheld monitor that we don't feel is very robust or reliable and has questionable accuracy. And then people are wondering why the monitors don't agree with their air quality devices or sensors. And without going into a lot of detail, we don't expect them to. They cost $250, our monitors $10,000. It also, our monitors are routinely audited, serviced, and calibrated, and they're built to withstand a lot of punishment in 24/7, 365 days a year. Some of these devices we're seeing now, they look like something you could buy at play school, and a lot of them are designed for interior use only. So if your monitor's at a different location than our monitor, then you're probably going to get a different result. The other compounding issue is the air quality index. It's based on 24 hours of exposure. That's what the red, green, yellow, orange is all about. If you're having this monitor that's telling you real-time values, then that's not really representative of the air quality index. So we've got a lot of work to do. And one of the issues is that when we don't have fires, believe it or not, we have enough work to keep us busy full-time as an air quality agency. When there are fires, that just really stretches us to the breaking point. And we also have spent a lot of time explaining to the public, as I said, the differences in monitors. We are looking into right now bringing in some air quality sensors that are lower cost that can be deployed in each of our cities that we can run as a fire monitoring network. And we hope to be testing such a monitor in the near future. And we hope to hopefully EPA will give us some money to establish this system so that we don't have to take a lot of money out of our coffers to come up with it. But I'm excited about doing this. It would provide more accurate and real-time monitoring results throughout our jurisdiction. And the other issue I just want to bring up that was sort of contentious and troublesome is that we were issuing air quality advisories for the general public to stay inside and to shelter in place and not to exert, have additional physical exertion or exercise. And at the same time, there's an emergency regulation that went through with Cal OSHA that alerted farm workers and farmers that when air condition air conditions got in the unhealthy range, they were to provide the workers with a mask who were outside. And in 100 degree weather plus, we're not sure that there were, these masks would be effective if worn. We certainly are not advising people to wear masks who are experiencing exposures, because it's been, most health officers agree that masks do not protect. They may help with COVID, but not with smoke. So we've got our work cut out for us. I know we've been having conversations with CAPCOA, the California Air Pollution Control Officers, and Cal OSHA, and try to resolve this issue. I know farmers need the crops to be picked, and workers want to work because that's their income. So this is becoming a real issue for us, and we hope to be proactive about it, and hopefully we can get to a place that recognizes public health and safety for everyone. And so I'll keep the board advised and appraised of efforts that continue. Also, just in engineering, we're working with CARB, the California Resources Board, on their proposed criteria for toxic emission reporting regulation. They'll be taking this updated regulation to their board in November. As I mentioned previously, this is going to put a lot of onus on local businesses. They're upping the amount of chemicals that have to be quantified, and their emissions have to be quantified. We're unconvinced that the state can handle the data. They don't have a database system designed yet. So we're urging them to delay, especially during this COVID crisis. We've been able to continue training for our staff because CARB and other organizations are now offering a lot of live web-based trainings. We have actually an oil and gas training going on today. So that's really good. So we're keeping current. And we're still continuing to march forward on our permit database with Acela. And we'll be mapping the data in our Tracket database and moving that over to Acela so we can transfer all of our existing information and get that up and running. Planning and air monitoring, we have two electric vehicle DC fast charge stations that have been recently installed at Target stores in Marina and Hollister. They're awaiting PG&E for activation to make them available to the public, but these were installed under our AB 923 program, Plug-in Monterey Bay grant program, and they were done by our contractor ChargePoint. And these are really convenient destination locations for EV DC fast chargers, especially where there's high traffic and opportunities for activities such as shopping while being plugged in. Our Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program is marching forward. So far, we've processed 40 applications. Four of those have been low income, and we've obligated about $75,000. So that's about 83% of the amount. So we're plugging along, but we don't see demand as high as in previous years, even though we doubled the incentive amounts, and it may be a reflection of COVID and reluctance to invest right now in this economy. Our zero emission school bus programs received 27 applications, and we've delivered 11 all electric school buses to local school districts throughout our region. Funding for the buses is also through our AB 923 funds, East Garrison Mitigation Funds, and the California's Hybrid and Zero Emission Truck and Voucher Incentive Program, which is called HVIP. And lastly, Central Coast Community Energy, formerly known as Monterey Bay Community Power, has also provided us with funds, matching funds on a number of these buses. With respect to outreach, I want to directly thank Director Lopez. Apparently, he was getting a lot of calls, as I'm sure others of you were getting, about what the air quality index means, about where the monitors are located and what's going on. So we put on a video on our website and on our YouTube channel. And then we recently completed a Spanish translation. We used one of our staff, Israel Rubio Salazar. He's done an incredible job with that. And so we're trying to get all of our stuff in English and Spanish out there. So if you have anything that you have concerns over or want to see posted, please let me know. We'll try to get that up and running. Also, our fall edition of the district's newsletter is going to be out this Friday on September 18th. And in that, I'll have an article on the dilemma between personal air monitoring sensors and our air monitoring sites that are located throughout the jurisdiction. So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Great, thank you, Rich. Any questions from any directors at this time?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes. Yeah, concerning the areas damaged by fires, does MBARD have a role in the cleanup, toxic cleanup process at all, issuing any permits, anything like that?
At this time, we really don't. The residential areas are typically smaller than the regulated areas that we cover with businesses. However, we have released a number of public service announcements, so to speak, on our webpage, talking to residents about being careful when they sift through their ashes. We're primarily concerned about things like asbestos, but we've also seen characterizations most recently by the California Air Resources Board showing the differences between residential wildfires and forested wildfires. And the main difference is there are a lot of toxic emissions in the residential communities when they're burning up. And in particular, heavy metals are released. So there's not much we can do. We can let people know about that and they can try to avoid, you know, their exposures to that, but it's been really hard. We usually tell people to leave the area if they're trying to avoid exposure, but the smoke has been so bad throughout. Like I said, the nearest place you could go until recently was Utah for clean air. So yeah, people should be aware of it to minimize, stay indoors and run their air filters if they have the device or their air conditioning.
Yeah. Thank you. On a related note, my home insurance was recently non-renewed, and then they issued a new policy and it excluded toxic cleanup. They didn't use those words, but basically the material that has to be cleaned up in the ground.
I know that was a real problem for the fire that took place up in Northern California and Sonoma, Paradise Fire, that they declared the entire town a hazardous waste site. It requires actually all the waste has to be handled as hazardous waste and deposited and thrown away in approved hazardous waste landfills. So it's a big problem.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. Good question. Any other questions from board members?
Chris Lopez has his hand up.
You okay? Yeah, Chris.
Rich, I just want to say thank you. I know it was a big ask sort of on the spot as the smoke filled the Salinas Valley and your staff was incredible in turning around the English version and then a quick response to get that into Spanish. And I know that I got a lot of positive comments after it made it into the community. So thank you so much for that work. We really appreciate it. As people have questions, having a resource like the like MBARD Ready to Go was incredibly helpful. So thank you.
Your feedback was really helpful too, and we appreciate it, and we encourage that. So sometimes we think we've got it handled and we don't. And I'll just say this too, a lot of us, including myself, we're evacuated. I know some of you were evacuated, and staff really pulled together and got things done. We're experiencing COVID and the smoke and evacuations. It's been pretty hectic here, but we're pulling together and it's good to see. So thank you.
Thank you again.
Great, thank you very much. Any other questions? Don't see. Okay, so seeing none, we move on to our consent agenda.
Chair, I think you need to just ask for public comment on the.
Oh, sorry, yep. So any public comments or questions from the public at this point regarding the Air Pollution Control Officer's report? Okay, seeing none there. Ann, anything came in?
No.
Okay, thank you very much, Les. Okay. Moving on to the consent agenda, we have five items. Any member of the board like an item pulled from the consent agenda? Okay, seeing none. Members of the public, nobody here. Ann, any requests to pull any items from the consent agenda?
I don't see anything.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So moved.
I'll Thank second. You.
It's Zach. Moved by Parker, seconded by Friend. Ann, will you call the roll?
Yes. Let me get my little electric thing. When I call your name, please answer yes or no. Chris Lopez?
Yes.
Fred Ledesma?
Yes.
Jack Dillis?
Yes.
Jane Parker?
Yes.
John Phillips?
Yes.
Mary Ann Carbone?
Yes.
Ryan Coonerty?
Yes.
Steve McShane?
Yes.
Zach Friend?
Yes.
I think that's everybody. It's unanimous.
Thank you very much, Ann. So we'll move on to our regular agenda. The first item is a public hearing and consideration for the adoption of our resolution approving Rule 426 on architectural codings. So Rich, I believe this is Amy, correct?
Yeah, so I'll just head it up. Well, actually, is Mary, are you going to do the
presentation? Song's going to do the presentation, and okay. Mary.
So the guy with the headphones. That is mic fixed, so we should not have any problems, but this is an update, a revision to our existing Rule 426, which covers architectural codings. We have had, I'm sure Song will tell, we've had some public outreach as well as ran this by the advisory committee, and we took their comments into consideration in developing this final proposed rule. So without further ado, Song.
Good afternoon. Just wanted to make sure for all the board members, you guys hear me loud and clear? Perfect. Right, here we go. And you guys see my presentation? Perfect. Okie dokes. All righty. I'm here today. My name is Song Kim. I'm with the an air quality engineer here for the MBARD. I'm here today to present you to the revisions of our Rule 426, which is our architectural codings rule. Some of the items that we're going to discuss today in my presentation, I'll just give you a background information on what the architectural codings rule is all about. The California's Air Resources Board involvement into the architectural codings rule, the proposed changes that we are making, the emissions impact, and as well the public comments we received during the public hearing process. And so what is architectural codings? Architectural codings are basically codings that are used to code buildings and homes. And the reason why MBARD cares about these codings is because when these codings are applied, a pollutant called volatile organic compounds, also known as VOCs, are emitted. And VOC is of concern to the district because they are both precursors to ozone and particulate matter. And as we know it, ozone is harmful to our health, and which is why one of the more reasons why we need to reduce these emissions. Based upon the 2012 data from the California Air Resources Board, architectural codings do play a large role in emissions in our district, which account for 2.35 tons per day, which is about 868 tons per year. But this is 2012, and I'm sure with the revisions that we're making and that we have been done in 2012, that there we will see a reduction in these emissions. So District Rule 426, architectural codings. They apply to any person who supplies, sells, offers for sales, applies, or solicits the applications of any architectural codings or manufactures, blends, or repackages any architectural codings for use in our district. These codings are controlled from the rule by limiting the VOC content of the coating. And we have this rule because it is required by the state to comply with our obligation to adopt all necessary feasible control measure. The VOC emissions reduced from this rule will help our districts in our effort to attain and maintain the state 8-hour ozone standard. So the California Air Resources Board is an oversight agency that provides assistance to the air districts. And one of the ways they provide assistance is by developing what we call suggestive control measures, also known as SCM. The SCM is basically a model rule that can be adopted by air districts throughout California. One of the reasons and the key benefits of creating SCM is that it allows consistency and uniformity among all the different California air districts, and it also makes it easier for manufacturers and painting contractors to comply with district rules throughout California. And so the SCM is very similar to our Rule 426. They list out the different VOC coding limits, and they're expressed in grams per liter. So we are here today because in 2019 and as well as 2020, the California Air Resources Board, CARB, made some changes to their SCM. And in 2019, to summarize those revisions, is basically they lowered VOC limits on 9 existing coding categories, added 3 new coding categories, and then also set VOC limits for colorants added to architectural coatings. These new limits that were revised in 2019 will now align with the existing limits that was adopted from the South Coast Air Quality Management District and their Rule 1113. And the compliance date for these new VOC limits are effective in starting January 1, 2022. And then in 2020, they made another revision to add this new coding category called photovoltaic coding category, which is basically an anti-reflective coding that you will put on existing solar modules. And the benefits of applying this coding is that the manufacturer said that these coatings, when applied, will provide a 3-4% energy efficiency. By applying these coatings, we have a renewable energy source, and we do not need to rely on getting power from the power plants, and we can have more power from the solar modules or the panels. And so what are these proposed changes that we're going to be making to our Rule 426? So what we're going to do is to eliminate the definition of non-flat high gloss coating from the table one, as it is no longer needed, update outdated definitions or remove them and and as well to reflect those 2019 revisions, we're going to establish those new VOC limits in our table, which will be shown in our later slide. And then for the 2020 changes, we are going to add a standalone section denoted as part 7 to account for that photovoltaic coating category. And then we also added some updated language to the sell-through provisions, and as well added a new term called market in the applicability section. And so in this next slide, I will show you the different updates in the coating category limits that are being proposed. On the second column, the current limit, you will see there is the current limit proposed in our rule. If you see an NA there, that basically means that there was never a current limit in our existing rule. And so that's why I put an NA there. And if you can compare the current limit and the proposed limit, you do see a significant reduction. You know, for example, let's look at aluminum roof coatings. It went from 400 grams per liter to 100. And there are significant reductions. And as for table two, these are the new colorants that are being proposed from that 2019 revisions that we're going to add, and as well as their respective proposed limit that is going to model what is on the suggested control measure. And then table three is that new photovoltaic coatings that will be applied on solar panels and their proposed limit. And for this coding, they actually have more limits, and which is a max usage limit, which is 27 gallons per day. And so what are the benefits from implementing this rule? So if we adopt the 2019 revisions, we anticipate the VOC emissions reduced to be about 0.09 tons per day, which equates to about 33 tons per year of VOC reduce. And then by implementing the 2020 revisions, by coating the solar panels with that new photovoltaic coating, although we're going to see a one-time VOC increase of about 0.068 tons per day, but if you look at over a 10 year lifetime project, you know, the emissions that we will be avoided from power plants are listed on that table below. And you see, do see a significant reduction over 10 years. You see oxides of nitrogen to be about 10 tons, VOC 1.7, oxides of sulfur 0.6 tons, particulate matter to be about 3 tons, carbon monoxide or CO to be about 19 tons, and then for greenhouse gases, about 24,000 tons. And so during this period, we did receive comments from the public and as well the state agency CARB, who created the SCM rule, and they made some suggestions. They recommend that we updated the definition of the flat coating, which we did. Recommend adding the language for professional use only to the labor requirements of the specific section. We as well agreed to do that change, and as well change the language of section 6.5.3 to match the same language of section 8.5 of their SCM rule, and that was made as well. And then we also receive a comment from a gentleman named David Dolling, who is a member of the Association Coding, America's Coding of Association. And he requested to add additional labeling language for industrial coatings and retain the definition of non-flat high gloss coatings. The staff reviewed the suggested control measure and as well as different rules from especially South Coast that the labeling language that is currently in our rule is suffice, and we did not address his comment on that. However, we did agree to retain the definition of non-flat high gloss. And then another lady by the name of Diane Brickman made a comment about the elimination of fire retardant definition. After further review of this comment, we did realize the confusion and the importance to retain the definition of fire retardant, as there is a definition in our rule that is called fire resistive. And so we brought that back so that we can provide clarity between fire retardant and fire resistive. And then the state suggested to remove the anti-fouling coating category. However, we received a comment from Spencer Vartanian from Dynegy, which is our local Moss Landing power plant, to request to continue to uphold the existence of anti-fouling coating category from Rule 426, which will bring us to the next discussion about anti-fouling coatings. So what are anti-fouling coatings? They're basically specialized paints that you will be applying underwater portions of marine vessels so that you can prevent or reduce the attachment of biological organisms, kind of like sea barnacles. And these coatings can also be applied to the pipe serving the power plant cooling water system to prevent biofueling, which is one of the reasons why Dynegy, our power plant, requested to continue to uphold the anti-fouling coating category. It is important to note that this category was removed during the 2012 revision of the suggestive control measure. However, back in 2012, when we came to the board and as well as for the advisory to make this change, we received direction from both the advisory and the board of directors at that time to continue to retain the anti-fouling coating category. And so what does that mean if these category was, if this anti-fouling coating category was removed? It will basically mean that the VOC limit of such coating applications would default to that of a special coating, which would be at a more stringent limit, which is 100 grams per liter of VOC versus currently right now is 400 grams per liter. After discussions with Dynegy, MBARD recommends reducing the anti-fouling coating VOC content limit from 400 grams per liter to 175 grams per liter. So we're still going to see an emissions reduction. We're going to continue to uphold this anti-fouling coating category. And with that, that ends my presentation. And I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Song. We'll exit if we can. Let's see. There you go. Thank you, Anne and Song. So questions, this is an action item. This is a chance for the public and for each of us to dive in. So let's see, I'm looking for hands. There we go. Director Phillips, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand the practical effect of this. And we all know over the years, we've seen products required to change oil-based painting to water-based. And we saw that in cars and house paint and the other things. So in some of the ways we're going may be better for the environment, but the products aren't as effective. So what's the result of this? Will the cost of these products required to go up? Will it be less effective because of this? And I guess my other question is this putting us in the same place as other jurisdictions, or are all jurisdictions going to have these same rules basically in back? What I don't want to see is going off like we did with the wineries, or saying, well, we're going to get out in front of everybody, and then when we try to go back to level the playing field, we're in a tough spot. So those are kind of my thoughts. I'd like to know the practical effect of it too, as we see.
Well, this is Mary, the engineering supervisor. And as Song mentioned, it is a state, it's a state suggested control measure. And the reason being that the state produces it is so that all of the air districts are consistent. So that when somebody goes to Home Depot in Southern California, it's going to be the same product that's sold at the Home Depot in Northern California. And the practicality of it is the ARB is only, they put these limits there because they've already been demonstrated. So there are some products, the majority of the products, they're already available. It might drive some of the other products manufacturers to reduce their VOCs, but the issue is that 60% of the architectural coatings are used in Southern California in the South Coast Air Quality Management District, and so basically the limits are being reduced to match the South Coast. So they're already available, they're being used, and there are manufacturers making these products. So we don't have any manufacturers in our air district. So if there are some manufacturers who aren't meeting those VOC limits, yes, they will need to step up and reduce their limits to be able to sell them in California. So there are a lot of products where you won't see any price change. I think ARB said there could be some reductions because you might have more people selling the product to maybe possibly $4 to $6 a gallon, but again, it depends upon what type. Whoops.
Well,
I promise.
$4 to $6 a gallon is significant.
Well, what ARB said in their staff report is that this will be driven by competition, so they don't expect any increases in the cost of a paint. However, if you look, because they're competing for the same products, and yeah, the products are already being sold. So if somebody wants to buy a product, there's already a manufacturer who's selling it, making it. So if the new manufacturers have to come in and also make it, they have to be competing with the guys who are already making it. So that's why ARB stated in their staff report that they don't expect there to be a cost increase. Okay. But they also give the statement in their staff report that yes, it could, they're depending upon, you know, the 30, 40 compounds, there could be cost increases potentially. But their summary was these products are already being made, they're already being sold, and competition drives the price.
All right, thank you. A follow-up question, though. You mentioned Southern California here. Is that driving the changes?
Yes, so the South Coast Air Quality Management District has a rule 1311.
1113.
1113, and that has been around for many years.
Goodness.
So the suggested control measure, the last time it was revised was in 2007. So the state is now updating the suggested control measure to match what has been done for the last 13 years, the South Coast.
And so we will be...
We will be consistent with if 60% of the products are used in the South Coast, basically we'll now be consistent. Truthfully though, I will tell you, if you go to Home Depot and you look at a gallon of paint, the label is going to say complies with the South Coast Air Quality Management District standards. The manufacturers are already selling. To sell in the South Coast Air Quality Management District. So therefore, there's no change to the people who purchase materials in our air district. They're already purchasing South Coast approved products.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mary. Did you want to reply anything else, Richard, before we go to other directors?
Yeah, I think just to put it like a little simply is that South Coast drives the paint manufacturing market, not us. We're too small. So this rule just gets us in line with what's already being sold. So we're not pioneering. We're not out in front of anything. We're just sort of adopting what's already available. And then just to the performance characteristics, we know, and we had the American Coating Association participate in this process. A lot of their new coatings are actually perform better than the old ones, less VOCs. So, you know, we've seen that they're constantly improving their coatings and they're able to get the VOC content down. So we're not pushing anything. It's not like you can go out and buy a non-compliant. If there are some, there's plenty of time for sell-through to occur in stores if they have some really old stock in the back of their shelves or something. But we don't, and we're not going to be inspecting that.
And we're going to be consistent with the other northern county.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Director Phillips. Director Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in thinking about the last bit of the conversation, I would think it would be a lot easier for the manufacturers if 50% or more of their product is consumed according to one standard. They're going to make it to that standard and sell it everywhere because it's just a lot cheaper to do it that way and a lot less confusing. So, my question had to do with the Dynegy issue. It sounded like they were trying to get a different standard. And so we were able to, the one that was in our materials and that was shown here in the slide was, instead of going as low as 100 grams per whatever it was, liter, we're going to do 175 grams. And I just wanted to verify that's gotten their approval. They're not going to be fighting us. It's pretty close to what's being suggested. And so I wanted to verify that. And then how is CARB going to view that, that we're not going to the default standard?
So this is Mary again, and yes, we did work with Dynegy, and they use two products, and one of their products is at 147 grams per liter. So we definitely felt, well, then there's no need to keep it at 400. They already have a product that's much less, so we thought we would bring it down to give them a little flexibility in case something changes. We brought it down to 175. Again, it is still a suggested control measure, and therefore we thought that we should have the flexibility for this one particular manufacturer to use it. And the difference, when we talked to ARB in 2012, when we last came to you, they stated, well, you don't have a marine coatings rule. So if we had a marine coatings rule, we could have had a different coating that was not in the architectural coating rule. And that's how South Coast has. They have two rules. They have an architectural coating rule and a separate marines coating rule. So we feel that we don't need to have two rules. but in a way we'll allow this one particular coating to be a marine coating.
Thank you. And then sort of a follow-up to this. So I did notice that this was a suggested control measure. Is this a precursor to a state requirement, or how does that work?
The state tries to help all the air districts, and this is one mechanism and where the state can help. You know, they do all the research on all the coatings, so they come up and develop these limits. And like Song showed you, it makes it much more efficient and more practical for people to comply with the rules and regulations when it's consistent throughout the state. And this is one of those perfect examples of, you know, everybody's buying their products at the local hardware store, that the hardware stores want to be, they don't want to be having to sell things also in different districts. So it does make it easier for the manufacturer, the painters, to comply with the regulations when it's consistent.
Thank you. Looks like our fearless leader may be frozen again. Maybe I can just pass the baton to Mayor Carbone, who's the next hand.
Thank you, Jane. Yes, Mr. Stedman had answered my question regarding the anti-fouling coating, so the marine paint on the bottom of the boats would there be with the reduction of the VOC, would there be additional maintenance that would need to occur on marine vessels? And another question was, how does this affect contractors? I know when I was working at that community hospital, we're putting in an underground parking garage, and they were using waterproofing that was super strong. VOC, if it was warm, I mean, it really was horrid. By lowering the VOC, the product would still be work effectively. So that would be just a question.
I'll take this one again. Again, the products are and they are for sale. I don't have any specifics on a specific coating. Again, the research is all done at the ARB level. But they're being sold, they're being used, and they've been being used for the last 13 years. So I would say yes, they're effective and they are available.
Thank you.
If I might, I should just say that that's one of the reasons we don't have a specific marine coatings rule. We worked with the power plant because they basically gave us feedback that said we can meet a more stringent standard. We don't need the huge gap there, but we still want to use this product, and we agreed because they believe that that's the paint that performs best for them. So rather than try to make them switch to something that may not work as well, we accommodated them. We still brought down the emissions. So we think that it's the best of both worlds. We got a compliance as well, and they got to keep the paint that they're using. So it should work well for them. And then I should lastly say, they don't use this paint that often. We don't expect them to be, it's not like they apply it, you know, every week or something. So we don't expect to see very many emissions from this application, this paint at all. So it's an easy, it's an easy test for us to go ahead and compromise with them.
And if I would like Mike to add, it is also, they also shared that it was required for them to continue to use these type of coatings as it was required from the State Water Board to maintain compliance with their once to cooling provision.
Okay, thank you, Rich. We got Marianne, Jack,
Jane.
Any other questions? Or Jack, are you ready?
I am. Yeah, my question is, I understand we don't have any manufacturers living here now, but are we aware of any manufacturers that are considering moving here?
We don't have any applications, nor have we gotten any calls for permits.
Thanks.
Okay, great. Any other questions from directors? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the public. Members of the public present, or any comments that have been received, Dan?
I'm sorry, no, and I don't see any raised hands.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. This is an action item. So at this point in time, we'll look for a motion.
Move approval. Phillips.
By Phillips. Second.
Parker.
Seconded by Parker. We have a motion and a second. Ann, you want to call the roll?
When I call your name, please say yes or no. Chris Lopez?
Yes.
Fred Ledesma?
Yes.
Jack Dillis?
Yes.
Jane Parker?
Yes.
John Phillips?
Yes.
Marianne Carbone?
Yes.
Ryan Coonerty?
Yes.
Steve McShane?
Yes.
Zach Friend?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you. Thank you, Song. Thank you, Mary. We'll go on to our next item, which is an action item. And that's number 14, and it's a resolution allocating $1.62 million to the fiscal year 2021 AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emissions Reduction Grant Program, along with authorization for the Air Pollution Control Officer to move on that. So, Rich, you want to tee this up?
Yep, so really quickly, Alan's going to be doing the presentation, if I got that right. And this is something you've already seen at our last meeting. We made recommendations with respect to how we'd like to allocate the $1.6 million. And so we're going to go over that and formally get your authority to provide these grant awards to the applicants that have merit. So without further ado, Alan.
Great. Ann, am I ready to share? Yep.
Whenever you're ready.
I'm going to find it. How am I doing so far? Everybody see that? Uh-oh. Did I lose audio? What's
we see you, Alan.
Don't see your slides.
Which is nice, but we don't see your presentation.
Okay. Let me try this again. Get out of this. I'm clicking on this. This is what I want to share.
That guy's song.
Share. Hit the share button, Alan.
There you go.
Okay, so let's start. Let me try this again.
Yeah.
All right, how's that look?
It's good.
No?
We got it.
Yep, good.
Hey, congratulations, Alan. All right, good afternoon, Chair McShane and members of the board. Every year we come to you in September for final approval of the awards that the staff recommends in August, which we presented to you last month. As Rich said, this is just gonna be a quick reiteration of what we presented to you last month, summary and recommendations. So every year we allocate by county based on population. This was this year's allocation based upon the available funding that was approved by your board last month for our FY 2021-2766 budget. So the next slide that I want to kind of pay some attention to was the total funding request by county. This particular year, we had no projects from San Benito. I attribute some of that to the COVID impact, but therein lies the metric. We had 900,000 plus from the County of Monterey and 1.2 million from the County of Santa Cruz, 900,000, County of Monterey, 1.2 million. This was our actual budget total. So we set aside 400,000 every year by board approval for the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. And the total funding total for the direct emission reduction projects was 1.6 or 1.1 $1,620,000 to be exact. So with a total of anticipated funding of $2,020,000. Recapping again, these were the Monterey County projects that came in that were eligible for funding. There were just three of them, and you can see how they rank from the top based upon the cost effectiveness expressed in dollars per ton of emission, and then the annual tons actually reduced by the project. The next slide shows the Santa Cruz projects that were eligible, once again ranked by annual tons reduction and by CE. So we had a total of six direct emission reduction projects that were eligible. We came to the board last month with staff recommendation based upon the amount of money available. And so staff is recommending to fund the City of Monterey for their adaptive traffic signal control project, as well as the City of Salinas. In Santa Cruz County, we recommended the adaptive traffic signal control for the Aptos area and for the City of Santa Cruz to develop and implement a all-electric Class 8 electric refuse truck, which is a really key project based upon zero emission and no diesel toxic exhaust contaminant 2.5 micron. I want to just quickly add a comment from the City of Monterey during this process that an unforeseen benefit of adaptive traffic control came about just due to COVID. So because of the fact that we were all sheltered in place, traffic congestion was so minimal that it really had everybody loved it because one, no one was in their cars and you could drive if you had to drive without any congestion. But the impact of that to all of the municipalities that own these signals is that they spent literally thousands of dollars to go back in and reconfigure every single controller to accommodate the fact that traffic was considerably lighter than it would be during normal AM and PM peak traffic. So that there's an unforeseen, humongous financial benefit to this, to these systems. With that, we wrapped up our budget of $1,620,000 with the remaining funding that the board approved in August to move from our EVIC program last year to this fiscal year's AB 2766 project for the tune of $20,000. So we recommend we award a voucher to the County of Santa Cruz and also award a voucher to AMBAG. Even though AMBAG does not have a vehicle to scrap and replace per the requirement, staff and management felt it appropriate nonetheless to award them with a $10,000 voucher for the procurement or lease of an all-electric light-duty vehicle. So that brings us to 1.6 and change. And with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Great. Thank you, Alan, for all of your work. We'll go to directors for any questions or comments at this time. Okay. Yeah, that was either Les or Fred.
That was
Fred. I don't know. All right. We'll go to the public if there's any members of the public on the call or Ann, anything received?
No, I haven't received anything in email and I don't see any raised hands.
Well, this is some of the best work we do. Thank you, Alan, for your work. So we will entertain a motion at this time.
Lopez moves.
Phillips, second.
Moved by Lopez, seconded by Phillips. Ann, let's call the roll.
Okay, give me just a moment here to get my electronic thing up. Whoops. Okay. Hold on. Okay. Here we go. When I call your name, please answer yes or no. Chris Lopez?
Yes.
Fred Ledesma?
Yes.
Jack Dillis?
Yes.
Jane Parker?
Yes.
John Phillips?
Yes.
Marianne Carbone?
Yes.
Ryan Coonerty?
Yes.
Steve McShane?
Yes.
Zach Friend? He may have dropped off. He had to go on the phone. But the motion passes unanimously. Well, the motion passes.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Alan. We'll move on to item 15, and this is an informational item, and this is our annual report on the district's air toxics program. Rich, or we'll go directly to Amy.
Okay, sounds good. Good afternoon. I will share my presentation. So starting last year, we've been giving you an update on our air toxics program. And this is a program where we review all of the facilities in the district for what their potential toxic exposure to the public is. And this is a program where we can't do all 1,800 facilities at one time. We have to break it down by different categories so it's a manageable piece of work for us. So we'll be giving you updates every year on our progress. So I'm just gonna start with some background information to help define what is an air toxic, what is the Air Toxic Hotspots Act, and then what we've been working on. So what is an air toxic? So we have two definitions that we use. One is a federal definition from the EPA, and they call them hazardous air pollutants, and they're listed in the Clean Air Act. And the state, the California Air Resources Board, has their own terminology, which is a toxic air contaminant, and it's a longer, more expanded list of substances. And it's things like in the right corner there, benzene, metals. These are things that can pose a risk to or potential hazard to human health. So back in 1987, the Air Toxics Hotspots Act was approved. And the goals of the act are to collect toxic air contaminant emissions from, and these are from facilities. So when we get a permit application and we evaluate the impact from that permit unit, so it would be just like a single engine or a single boiler. But this act, really what you're doing is you're going back now and you're taking all of the equipment that's permitted at a facility, all the engines and boilers, and you're looking at them all together and asking what is the risk from all of these things when they're operating together. So that's how we're going to identify facilities that may have localized impacts, look at the health risks, and then notify affected individuals. And so that's the outline of what we're doing and why this act was established. So we did this back in the early days of the 90s when the act was first passed, and there have been some changes, and that's why we're going back now and relooking at all of our facilities. So the facilities have to report the type and quantity of toxic substances that they're emitting. We determine whether or not there's a health risk assessment that's needed, and I'll go into more details of how we make that decision. The health risk assessment has to be conducted following Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. They develop the procedures for how you do a health risk assessment. And then if a facility is determined to have a significant risk, then they're required to notify the public in the location near the facility. And then they have to implement a plan to reduce the risk within, they have to prepare a plan within 6 months to reduce the risk within 5 years. So what we have started to do is we look at the applicability and which facilities need to go through this process. And those that we determine need to go through the process have to prepare an emission inventory plan and an emission inventory report. We take in that information and then we do a risk assessment through a prioritization, and we decide, I'll go into more details in just a moment. And depending on how that prioritization comes out determines whether or not they need to do a full health risk assessment, whether they need to do the public notification and the risk reduction. So applicability, we're looking at emissions and the sources, and then the emission inventory plan is a description of all of the activities that are going on at that facility and all the possible places where there might be toxic emissions. And then the report is giving us the more detailed information, the facility diagram, stack information, and emission information, so that we can, if we need to have that information, can be do a health risk assessment, because you need that information to do air dispersion modeling. So what we do in the risk assessment step is we review that the plan and the report, and we score the facilities, and the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association and the California Air Resources Board have developed guidelines for doing these prioritization scores. And so a facility is scored as high, intermediate, or low based on these emissions. And so if you're categorized as low, that's the third bullet. I'm sorry, I'm going from the bottom. The prioritization score is less than one, the facility is exempt. If it's between 1 and 10, then the facility is in a cycle of needing to report their toxic emissions on a 4-year cycle. And then if the prioritization score is greater than or equal to 10, then they need to submit a health risk assessment to us within 150 days. And then once you do that health risk assessment, the results of that health risk assessment are what determine whether or not public notification is required. So if you do your health risk assessment and it results in a cancer risk greater than 10 in a million, then you're triggered to have to do a public notification. If your chronic or acute risk index is greater than 1, then you're into having to do a public notification. So as part of that public notification, you also have to do a risk reduction plan, and the facility has to figure out ways that they can implement measures to reduce risk. And they need to submit that plan to us within 6 months of having a health risk assessment that is significant. And they're given 5 years to bring their levels below significance. And the types of things that we're finding that are triggering risk are older diesel engines. And so one way that a facility might implement, a measure they might implement to reduce risk would be to change out an older diesel engine to a newer, cleaner one to get their risk below the significance levels. So this past year, we've been working on, we added in 80 facilities in categories of hospitals, asphalt plants, wastewater treatment facilities, and military installations. And then, as Richard mentioned earlier, we've also been following the California Air Resources is actually currently proposing to update the guidelines that we use for hotspots and criteria air pollutant reporting. So they're doing an update of two regulations at the same time that will go to their board in November. And so we're trying to work with them on that and express our concerns because we're right in the middle of the process under the current regulation. And we're concerned how that might impact our progress and what we've already told facilities, whether they're exempt or when they have to report their emissions again. The timelines don't always match up with what now CARB is proposing to change. So as we continue moving through those facilities that we're working on, we are going to complete, we have 6 facilities left that we're still working with to finish their prioritization scoring. There were 2 facilities that were high priority. So we're working on reviewing their health risk assessments, and we have to send those off to the OEHA, which is the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, so that they can review and approve the results of those health risk assessments. And we did we've had one facility, the City of Santa Cruz Wastewater Treatment Plant, did a health risk assessment, and we've had that one go through OEHA review. So we have had one facility go through the entire process. And then they ended up being less than significant by doing that health risk assessment. So they were categorized as intermediate. So they didn't have to do the public notification or the risk reduction plan. As I mentioned, we're going to complete the facilities that we're currently working on. And then we're hoping that CAPCOA and CARB will finish up their industry-wide guidelines for gas stations so that we can get those going next year. So with that, I will take any questions.
Very helpful. Thank you. Yeah. Looking for any hands here. Okay, I don't see any right now. And anything from the public?
No, I haven't received any emails and I don't see any hands raised.
Well, thank you, Amy, for this report. And this concludes our meeting. We meet again on October 21st. I hope everybody's ready and we'll be there. And with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn. So. Thank you very much for attending today.